You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations Podcast from New York City. I'm Jonathan Braylock. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. You like that? And my guest today, and I totally already messed this up, by the way, because I should have 100% asked you how to pronounce your last name before we started, because I've never said it out loud.
No one has. It's kind of like Voldemort. You can't Frimpong.
So, Frimpong. Okay, yeah, Adrian Frimpong. Yeah. Like Voldemort. Adrian Frimpong, who improv fans might know from the Lloyd team, Slingshot. But currently on the Herald team, Ice Cold Bev.
It's cold out here, y'all.
Hey, we moving on up. Welcome, man. How you feeling?
Oh man, I'm honestly living the dream.
Are
man.
You?
Yeah, this is
all
a
right.
Trip.
My first question: what is the dream?
Yo, the dream. The dream was to. I'm gonna find. Okay, this is truth be told. Okay, I got this journal.
Okay. I like it. We're getting real. We're getting real, bro. Off the bat.
You know what? My mama told me 5 years ago. Okay. She's like, you know what? You seem like you want to perform. You're not happy. I was in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, you need to write down what you really want to do. And I had gone to DCM a couple of times, but I was like, I don't know if that's, you know, really something to pursue. And she said, write it down.
Okay.
And then backwards plan. So I wrote down a 5-year plan. I was like, all right, 5 years, be in New York. Performing on UCB stages, and then it's like everything in between was kind of like 3 years. Go to Masters of Science of Accountancy program.
Wait, no, you don't get to laugh through that. Yeah. Go to the Masters of Science Academy.
Okay, because like. The gap between when I was in Houston to getting to New York was vast. Like,
oh, you actually wrote down that and when you actually came to New York?
Yeah, it was
how long was that?
This was back in 2000, I want to say 12. Yeah, 2012.
Okay. And when did you get to New York?
2014.
That's not that bad. You got it in 2 years.
You know what?
Wait, it was supposed to be in the first year?
No. There was no way. Yeah. Not in my mind. No, I still had to go through the program.
Yeah, 2 years. That's in the 5-year plan.
Yeah, that was the 5-year plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it only took you, another 2 years become a house team?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's still within the five years.
It's in the 5-year plan. Hey,
I'm living that dream. Okay. You live the dream.
Yeah.
Yo, well, what's this Masters of Science, though? What's that all about?
Yeah, okay, because parents will tell you, like they want you to be okay on your own.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was working as, like, an Excel monkey. I was just like, I mean, all the shortcuts. Index match. For all you Excel nerds, I'm all about index match. Fuck a VLOOKUP. You know, if you really about that Excel, you be looking at
real. You know, I think the cross-section of this podcast is certainly improv nerds and Excel nerds.
Yeah, so I was excelling, and I didn't want to do that. I believe that, like, people, there's, like, something they really want to do. It's that thing that they enjoy doing more than anything else, so much that they would pay to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And for me, that was, like, definitely performing comedy.
But you had a backup plan?
My backup plan was... was to be an accountant.
Okay.
Because I
mean, it's not a bad in terms of backup plans go, it kind of makes sense because it's just like stable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not to belittle accounts, but a job that you can do, you can handle it. It's not super overwhelming.
Right. It's not backbreaking. 9 to 5.
But good pay.
good pay, reliable pay.
Everyone, and it's also a job that's not gonna like, it's not gonna just go away because of some technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless
the
I mean, maybe it could actually. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
You know what? Don't say that. If you look at the UCB podcast,
yeah, they're like, ooh, he did not call accountants right. They're gone.
Watch, this will be next year. Just some robots are doing all accounting.
Okay, cool. So that was your backup plan.
That was my backup plan.
All right, we're going to backtrack a little bit, though.
All right.
Okay, because you had mentioned seeing DCM a couple times.
Yeah.
But how did you get into improv? Where did the love of...
Oh, man.
Did the love for performance come before improv?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And that was, what, when you were a kid?
Yeah, I was like, the first time I was on stage, mm-hmm. like on a stage, and people were looking, I was like maybe 3 or 4 years old.
Okay.
It was, I grew up in the church.
Yeah.
Everybody mm-hmm. who grew up United Methodist, shout outs.
See, I was about to jump aboard, but you had to specific denomination. I was like, well, now I can't.
Yes.
Now I ain't a part of the United Methodist Church, though, but I was performing on my church stage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's how it is. Yeah, you can go up. There's not a lot of competition in church stages.
And this was in Texas?
This is in Texas. Okay. Sugarland, Texas, Southwest Houston. Hey, anybody from Houston, if you're listening from Houston, shout-outs. Yeah. But, yeah, it was like a choir. We were a choir. Mm-hmm. It was like a Christmas performance. Uh-huh. And, we were mad cute, man. We made these little halos out of like golden what's that, wire cleaner, pipe cleaners?
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, gold pipe cleaners.
Yeah, oh,
and
yeah.
We had made pillow wings.
Uh-huh.
So a bunch of 3 and 4 year olds, pillow angel wings, these gold halos, and we were just singing.
Was this the manger scene?
This was a manger scene.
Yeah, you guys were singing.
Just singing, you know, Joy to the World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
That was it.
I saw
everybody's mouth, mm-hmm. the jaws drop. I was like, I gotta get back out of here.
I think I was a shepherd.
Yeah, you know what? I bet you were a shepherd.
The love for performing came very young. I'm similar. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I was performing very young. So,
feels
where did you start getting into comedy? When did that jump happen?
I probably like just being a class clown. I'm not mm-hmm. even gonna.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I was.
Were you voted class clown?
Nah, I wasn't.
The funniest people are never voted class clown, I feel like. It's like the troublemakers who are voted class clown.
Yeah, yeah, troublemakers. Because, like, if you always, like, you got to finish school.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened in those
class clowns. I mean, like, I was cracking jokes, but I also, like, made sure not to get, like, detention every
day.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to, it's not fun in detention. Yeah, I got voted best handwriting.
Excuse me?
Yes. Best handwriting. But this was the second grade where, like... Best handwriting in the second grade.
Why was that a thing?
Hey, you know what, Jonathan? everybody should be recognized for the... But,
all right, cool.
I remember, like, making people crack up. Like, we'd be at a desk. They split our class in small groups of four.
Yeah.
And I liked making, like, my small group of four crack up the whole time. Like, mm-hmm. We'd have a... Like, I remember, like, a science fair... not science fair, like a science project. We're doing experiments.
Yeah.
And we had like animals. We were supposed to take care of frogs. And I'd be like, uh-oh, I ate the frog. Uh-oh, where's the frog, guys? And they'd be like, stop, 80s.
You stupid.
That's you stupid.
You stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
Miss
cool.
Foley did not like that. She often threatened to call my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I would start bawling, just crying.
Okay, we're getting a little too much now. All right, cool. So, and then where did improv come into play?
Improv came in. So I grew up like a lot of people in this community watching like a lot of SNL. Mm-hmm. I grew up during like Chris Kattan, Sherry O'Terry, Will Ferrell, Tim Meadows, like those dudes are my heroes.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few shows my dad, because we were like a religious household, and so like mm-hmm. I couldn't watch The Simpsons, but they let me watch SNL with them. So these plays at church would come mm-hmm. up, I would almost always like audition for and be cast for the most comedic roles. And so when I went to school, Went to Rice University. This is also in Houston, Texas. It's a small liberal arts school, maybe like 3,500 undergrads. And the biggest, like the biggest club on the scene at that school was an improv group. It was Spontaneous Combustion.
It was the biggest club out of any club?
It wasn't like people-wise, but the most like...
Like the most excited people got.
Like people came out for their shows.
Oh, wow. And what were you majoring in?
I was majoring in, I don't know.
You were just liberal arts?
I was there. Bro.
Okay. Undecided.
I applied as like humanities and then very quickly switched, like, because like I knew I could get in with the humanities, and then I switched as soon as I got there to like bioengineering to, you know, try and do pre-med. That fell, and those aspirations.
But now, I have a question because I studied acting in school, and like I remember my decision being like, I think I'm gonna go for this and like actually try to do it, but. I'm always interested in the people who didn't study acting, but always loved it and knew it's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So what went, and that still didn't have a real major.
Yeah.
Was in the back of your mind, when you entered college, were you like, I don't think I'll actually be able to do this. I need to get a real degree. Or were you like, I really want to do this, but I got to.
That one.
Yeah. It was just like, I got to do this for the parents.
Yes. So, yeah. 100%. Okay. And because of that, it was, if you're not intrinsically motivated to, you know, try and achieve a goal, especially like college isn't easy. This was a specifically like a rigorous school. I was a poor college student. Like I was very poor. And like looking back on it, I was like, it wasn't that I was dumb, although that was definitely like my mentality. Like I went from like making straight A's, being like one of the top students in my school, like a pretty big public school, to like just... straight B, C, D's. I've like failed first ever class. Like I wasn't going to class. I was sad, sad as hell as this pre-med major. And I was like, why don't I enjoy, these classes that I thought I would. And and then I took like a social psych class or psychology class. And that was like interesting. And then I took a social psych class and I did better in these classes because it was something I was interested in. So
that's a huge difference in college. But you joined that improv team there?
So I joined that improv. So the first 2 years still didn't do improv. I saw them. I remember seeing them perform and thinking to myself, like in the back of the room, like, I could do that.
Yeah. That's how it started for me. I don't know. I wonder how many people. It's funny because not everybody. I always think that everyone has that kind of competitive edge, but that's actually not true. Not everyone has it. But for me, for sure, it was like, please.
Yeah.
Okay. So for 2 years you didn't, but then your junior year, tried out.
I tried out. My best friend, who's now he's in New York, Adrian. He and I met each other, just like two Adrians, and he was like, "Yo, I'm coming. I'm gonna try out for Spoko. You gotta try out too." I was like, "All right, let's do this." And from then on, I got on that year and just. Yeah, fell in love immediately.
You guys doing long form?
We were doing short, man. Doing short you know form. We were doing short
you
form.
You know we were doing short form, baby.
The name of this game is called Four Court.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real.
Yo,
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
Was such a popular show.
Yeah. It was
everybody wanted to do short form.
Yeah. It's a high... It's the return rate on, like, as far as, like, laughter out of a short form show versus a long form, like... You drop anybody into a short form show, and the games are built into the show. Like you don't have to find it or like connect with you. You just play the game.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good old time.
So much fun.
Great.
Anybody knocking short form, you either bad at it, and you get exposed real quick in short form because you got to be funny real quick. All right, you got like 15 seconds to come up with a premise and a comedic idea. You when they're not laughing, that's you. That's not like, ah, man, this suggestion was whack. Nah.
It's funny because I think people hate on short form because they feel like it doesn't have as much artistic merit. But it's like there is a part of it that's like, well, it's not supposed to. It's just funny.
It's just funny.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
So when did UCB enter your mind? How did you know about it? Because you said you went to DCM. How did you know about DCM?
UCB, a tour co had come through Rice.
Oh, snap.
And I remember seeing them perform and thinking, oh, damn, that was amazing.
Right.
Especially after like our group went up, we were starting to do long form, and we just bombed. We just bad. which is like, of course, because we hadn't been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I remember going to, there's like a improv theater out based out of New Orleans, the New Movement, and they had like, this was after I graduated.
Okay.
This was like for Hell Yes Fest, I think. And they had another tour co. And I remember seeing the tour co there. James Dwyer was on that tour co at the time. I didn't know his name. Mm-hmm. I just remember like he had this funny, he had like this bit where like they would, I think they were doing a Spokane, but mm-hmm. he would like cut to and James Dwyer was like running a newspaper business out of out of his basement, and they cut to James. He would just like be standing there because he had headphones on, just like nodding his head to these headphones while like newspaper machines are running. At least that's how I remember. But that was also mind blowing. That's when I decided like, oh, UCB, that's where I need to go to get trained. Yeah, that's where I
got to
go.
And then you got to New York. Did you start taking classes right away?
Yeah, but by the time I got to New York, I know a lot, I guess like a lot of people don't, by the time I got to New York, I'd been doing improv like in Houston at a theater called the New Move, not New, the New Movement, Houston, and then it got changed to Station Theater. So, but, like, I'd been doing that since 2011, so.
After you graduated?
This is after I graduated, like right at like maybe 6 months, the theater opened up, yeah. Like just serendipitously. So I started taking classes there and been performing like at least like once a week, mm-hmm. two times a week, doing practice, like 2-3 hour practices. And then I moved to New York in 2014. So by the time I got to New York, I've been doing it for like 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
So yeah, I didn't have a lot of money. And I signed up for 2 classes, sketch and improv. I was like, I'm gonna go all out.
Yeah, you gonna go
in. And I went all broke real quick.
So did you do diversity scholarship?
I did, yeah. The diversity scholarship helped me like continue because I didn't even know about it until I got here.
Right. I took my first 2 classes not knowing about it.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then
diversity scholarship is truly, I wouldn't have completed the program. I probably would have went back to, because I was out of money. I was just out, yeah. So couldn't have afforded it.
And you got through the classes pretty quickly then, huh?
Like a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean that's quick for me. I think it took me maybe maybe it was just 2 years, but I feel like almost 2.5.
Yeah.
Like, including Ash.
Oh, I took him as fast as...
You took him as quickly as possible.
I was like, 101, 201,
yeah.
201.
And it was because I told him on this last podcast, but I like, had to wait for... Because this was when they would just do the 1 credit at a time for the diversity scholarship.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
you basically
have
to wait.
Yeah.
You get it, but then like,
wait.
And then wait, because the process was so long.
That's right.
I'm glad they don't... I'm glad they changed that. Yeah, and so... and then
Dave Siegel.
And then like so and then you got on. I mean, you auditioned.
Yeah.
Pretty shortly after, feel like.
I took one ASH with Sean Diston.
Mm-hmm.
His was his textbook Herald's ASH. That solidified game, how to reproduce that.
What was the moment where, like, can you describe how game clicked in for you?
Yeah. We had been running Heralds, and we had just been going through the textbook and mm-hmm. the examples in the textbook. And
this is the new textbook.
This is a new textbook mm-hmm. and what they meant. So today I'm a computer programmer, and I kind of see... I was just looking for I'm about to get nerdy as hell. A function needs a certain amount of parameters to run, otherwise it starts erroring out.
Yes.
And so for me, I was like, I still didn't know what that function was. And this class, I remember it was like, Diston was going through the different parts of like, okay, so you just have like, you need a base reality. Like, who are you guys? What are you doing? Where is this happening? Okay, you need that.
Who, what, where?
Yeah, who, what, where.
Get it out.
Got to get it out. That's
quickly.
Like, as soon as possible, because then you can't really, nothing, you don't know what's weird if
you're
you don't know
in
what.
A void.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that happened, it's so funny. It's so, I do, when I coach, I do like, I talk about who, what, where as like layups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for anybody who's like basketball, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. knowledgeable, mm-hmm. you know, when you're practicing layups, it's such a simple thing. Mm-hmm. By the time you get to the pros, you should know how to do it, but you should always keep practicing it because It is vital. Like, yeah. You need to know how to make a layup.
Oh, 100%.
So it's like, if you can't make a layup, you can't play basketball.
Yeah.
You got to get out of here.
LeBron James, one of the best players of all time. It's strange. You can't get a layup, but damn it. Sure can't.
It's like, you just need to know how to do it.
You got it. Yeah.
And who, what, where, I feel like it's the layups of basketball. Yeah. You just got it. Just get them layups out.
Yeah.
Don't stop forgetting. I think even pros forget sometimes.
Bruh, like, it's so, if I don't work on that explicitly, I find myself like starting to slack off, and then I won't catch it until like, fortunately, I have
You're
that
like,
muscle.
Oh my god, where are we?
Yeah.
We've been talking for 5 minutes. We
don't know where we are.
We're like, we're talking for 5 minutes, and I thought this whole time you were my sister.
Yeah.
It turns out you thought I was your lover.
Yeah, that explains so much. Yeah,
just, you know,
base reality, man, real important.
Yeah.
And then you can have fun things like an unusual behavior can pop off of that base reality. And then the, what's cool for me is like, I thought that was enough. Like, okay, you got a base reality, your unusual behavior, and like a justification.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the real crux of that is when you have that that unusual behavior. We need the response of the straight man to react to it. That's the framing of this unusual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
To say like, okay, I recognize that what you're doing is strange, and I'm letting you. It's like the handshake in the scene. Like, hey, I got it. Is this what you're doing? Like, mm-hmm. We're in a bank, and you're saying that you'd rather. This is going to be a poor.
That's
community
all good.
We're in a bank, and you would rather sign your name in peanut butter. Okay, I would frame that like, oh, Jonathan, normally you would sign it with a pen or a pencil. That's like me saying, like, is mm-hmm. this the comedic idea you're trying to, you know, play? And you'll say, like, yeah, you know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's peanut butter. George Washington Carver.
Yo, okay, that's great.
The best black man alive. And I'm honoring him by signing my name in peanut butter.
Okay, that's awesome. That's a great justification.
And then I take that. If that's true, what else is true?
If that's true, what else is true?
What you got in there for lunch? Nigga, you know I got some peanut butter.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah.
Those moving parts. So once we went over that, I was like, oh, yeah, those are the required arguments for the function, the base reality, unusual behavior, framing, justification, and then exploration and going back to the base reality. Like you mentioned, like if this, then what else? Like going back to the base reality almost always like help. Like I don't even think about like what to do next.
Just, yeah.
Go back to whatever I was doing before.
So once you got on Lloyd, do you feel like...
Oh, Lord.
Did you feel pressure? I mean, this is like the typical question, but did you... What was the difference now, like performing improv at indie shows as a pair, you know, opposed to like performing at UCB East?
Lloyd is... It's like such a dope program. I think it's... It's like, and my team was especially like really talented. I went from like it was like going to college and getting into like a really good school. In fact, it reminded me a lot of my own experience of like, oh, I'm pretty like I knew I was good in the indie scene, or like good, solid, not necessarily like I'm crushing these indie scene sets.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god, get up, my but then I was surrounded by people. Like Slingshot.
Yeah, you guys had a really good team,
oh,
right?
Oh, dude.
Dan Lee.
Sean, Bridget Hall. I mean,
Elizabeth.
Allie. Yeah, Elizabeth Ann. Nomi. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I hope I didn't leave anybody off that. Bob's sitting there like, you're definitely me. but they were all such game monsters, like truly. I remember the first practice, I wasn't even stepping out of beats because they were all so good at all the things that like on a fundamental, their fundamentals were crazy good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess like that was a humbling experience to feel like, oh, I got the hang of this, to like, oh man, I'm still not shit, like I still feel But then, like, you know, you rise to the occasion, and there's a reason why, like, everyone's put on a team. There's, like, they have their own unique approach to scenes, mm-hmm. and, you know, I
you know, I think I'd like to think that I found that with Slingshot.
And were you a team for? Were you on that team for the whole run?
That's right.
So there's a one year.
Yeah, 1 year.
And then shakeups happened.
Then the shakeups happened.
And you got on Herald.
Yeah.
Were you surprised or?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was, I was originally. Like a spot opened up real late in the game, so I was like, I knew which Lloyd team I was going to be on for the next. Like, even getting to do Lloyd again was pretty cool. Like, I didn't, man, that was like, it's true. Like, everyone's nervous about it. It's not even just like Lloyd, like, Herald teams are also like susceptible to shakeups. But that's around that time, honestly, when I started doing like. The first time I felt nervous about shakeups in general was like November. I was like, oh, I got to start working on something else just to get my mind off of this. Mm-hmm. I got moved up last minute because the spot opened up. I remember thinking about my dream journal, like, oh shit, it's happening.
Yeah. Living the dream.
It truly, man. People ask me how I'm doing. I don't say good or bad, but I do say living the dream because, man.
And now, did you feel a difference on Herald as opposed to Lloyd?
Oh.
I mean, first of all, I don't care. This is controversial.
Oh, hot take.
UCB Chelsea
yo,
is the best stage
it's
to perform
the
on.
Best.
I have performed on every single stage, including L.A., Franklin.
Been everywhere.
And Sunset.
Been on Sunset.
UCB Chelsea
been
is
on Franklin.
The best stage.
Hearing it from Braylock. UCB Chelsea. Best stage in the fucking world. No, but real talk, it is.
It is. It is. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It is.
That thrust?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You get, especially when you got people like sitting on this on the floor.
Exactly. Because Franklin has that kind of a little bit of that atmosphere, but it's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get as filled. Mm. It doesn't get as rowdy.
Yeah, it gets rowdy at Chelsea, man.
It gets anyway.
Oh,
so,
it's awesome. Yeah.
So that's I mean, just performing on that stage, I guess especially if you were somebody who if that was a part of your goal, I imagine was great. But did you feel like your level of improv kind of start to rise to the occasion? What, like?
Nah. I'm worried. Yeah.
He's being real.
I'm being, you know what?
He's being real.
I will, just because, like, I was hoping, like, this the same feeling I felt on Slingshot of, like, man, everyone's so good. I'm not supposed to be here. Like, there's so many other good people that should be here. Felt the same when I got put on Herald team. I've heard other people comment on this, but imposter syndrome is real. It's like this specter that's always over your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here.
And I mean, just because like we're both here right now, people of color at the was that something that it came in your? Did you think about like, oh no, am I the token? Am I the diversity hire?
Bruh, speaking of the truth, I felt like that on Slingshot. I was like, oh no, that's man, I'm token out here, man. Damn, I gotta remember. Now it's not even just like being you know, good as someone on a house team. There's also like, now I gotta think about. Being a representative for the entire black race.
It's like, man, if you don't do good, they ain't gonna put us on TV no more.
I better do a good show.
Oh,
Lord, yeah. Okay. Yeah, man, that's and I still, you know, I'm fortunate in that, like, myself, I'm not, like, the only person of color on my team. Like, Lily Dude is also out there. And you know, I'm gonna be real. I think it's not something that I ever really like. Once I'm on the team, I don't really let it. It's not something that I let it inform my play. Like I just try to get to know people as individuals. That's something that you know, that I was instilled with as a kid. Is like try to honor someone's individuality, and in doing so, your individuality will be honored.
But it's still, but the feeling of like, ah, shit, I'm like one of three black dudes in this theater, right? That never goes away.
Yeah, it never goes away. Yeah, it's hard. It's tough. And it's a society thing too. But I mean,
it's getting better though. I'm of like, course. Even at like Chelsea, I've been peeping more people of color coming to shows, like sitting in the front row too. Like honestly,
I
see y'all.
Hey, do you coach?
I mean, I do, but I
not consistently.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that because of your imposter syndrome, or just you don't really have time?
I don't really have time.
That's
like,
all. That's good.
Yeah.
That's all good.
Yeah. Right now, I would love to coach, but my hours are like, hey, you find me like I work a day job.
Same.
And then most of my evenings are like, I'm doing more stand up these days. I'm trying to.
You host a stand up show?
Yeah, I host a mic at a monthly show.
Where's that at?
The monthly show is at the Douglas.
Okay.
Need to find out the next date. The Douglas, part of Disco Ball.
That's cool.
And then a weekly mic. It's in Greenpoint. If you're like thinking, if you're an improviser, you're like, I want to put up some material, come through the Magic Mic in Magic City in Greenpoint.
All right, there you go. Because I was going to ask, I don't know, let me know if it doesn't really apply to you, but when coaching, is there an exercise or maybe even a philosophy that you like to get across? Like, you have the mic right now, right? We're talking to people who want to do improv, people who are doing improv, who are aspiring to be on house teams. In terms of, like, pure improv advice, you know, what's something that you had to kind of deal with that you want to like get out there? Like, I think people need to think about this.
I wish there were like a more common language to notes like commit more or commit, like just commit. And I think that means like acting like a thing. Just be a better actor.
Being a better actor?
Yeah, being a better actor in a scene. That's like real. Like, it would be weird if, like, you were watching, like, for example, a soap opera is ridiculous, but because all the actors aren't, like...
They're all committed.
Yeah, they're all committed. No one's, like, looking suddenly over the shoulder at, like, the camera, direct
to
camera.
Or trying to say things ironically.
Yeah, there's no ironic statements. It's just straight up, like, playing the reality of these heightened scenarios.
Mm-hmm. I fall into that. I will admit, I also fall into that trap, even though I come from an acting background of not always acting the character that I'm playing with the truthfulness and sincerity that character deserves because I'm trying to do this like I just call it like the UCB kind of improv game where you're just like detached
and like kind of like from a
distance you're like kind of winking and making fun of the person that you're playing instead of just being like
being
you're like
person.
Hey, if you're a prospector, like
be a prospector. Yeah, it's and you know what, you get laughs too from it. That's what's like so you get like some good laughs of that kind of detached play. It's tempting, avoid it. Like it's I still do it. It's so easy.
Yeah.
It's
and
so
I think easy. I think I don't know, for me I would say there's a time and a place for that detached, that ironic kind of take
never,
on something.
Never. Oh, no detachment.
Okay, never mind.
Never
never mind.
I'm trying to think of I'm wondering about like
I think it's a crutch is what I was gonna say. I think it's something that people do constantly and also maybe even subconsciously
no doubt. You know what I mean? Especially if like a set's, you know, it comes out more when your set is like not going particularly well, then you want to like physically and like psychologically separate yourself from the scenes you're doing to at least comment like man, this is going great. You know what I mean? Yeah. Ironically, not just commenting on what's going on in the scene, but kind of like a meta note. You know what's crazy? I think it just takes like performing. I wish non-improv audiences got to see more improv shows. Like if you can get
to host an indie show and get folks who don't normally watch improv, a lot of those meta moves, man, they fall on deaf. It's just a weird person saying another weird. It's like another weird thing. Like, wait, hold on. What's happening? Is this?
Yeah.
Is he being weird for saying that, or is the prospective person the weird person?
That's real. I don't know if you know this, but like I like made a Facebook thread that's like really popular.
Oh,
it's like it became super popular. Like. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, I know.
But one of the thousands of subtweets,
literally
subcomments. Some of the one of the things that was being talked about there was the improv scene being quote unquote ruined. We're not here to talk about the state of the Indian or the hyperbole of that statement, or at least I could say being hurt by the fact that only improvisers are seeing indie shows. Like, so indie shows will be comprised of a bunch of people performing, and the only people in the audience are the people who are performing on that show. Which I just thought was like kind of complimenting what you were saying about sometimes when I feel the same way about stand-up and open mics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard because the jokes that land on the open mics sometimes aren't the jokes that are going to land with the normal audience.
No, they're not.
You know, it's you're doing this like kind of inside baseball humor, and you're doing the shortcuts and not investing in the full.
And I've seen that in the stand-up scene, like, you did your open mic joke that, like, sometimes I see it all the time, where you were like, you present as like some sad and unaffected human. And it's like people who've been working every day during the week, and like they took a night out to see someone be funny, like they don't care. They don't care about your shitty open mic bit. They want you to be funny. Now, I think the same applies to like an indie improv show. This isn't even about improv specifically, but I've been to I think it's called Empress's New Groove. But like it was a well produced indie show, and I think there might be something said about the level of effort that goes into producing an indie show. It's like before Facebook, people would put up posters and talk to vendors around a venue and flyer in the city. And I don't know if anyone's doing that. We're really trying to like get their coworkers and friends who don't see a lot of improv come to their improv show, but I think like you got like with those kinds of raised stakes, I don't think you would be as I personally wouldn't feel as apt to lean on something like meta moves. Like then it's just like okay, like people who I care about and people who could have been anywhere else are here tonight. Let's put on the best show we can. That all those crutches stop, they start falling to the wayside,
right.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
We're the hosts of Definitely Dying, the podcast that's a safe space for listeners and funny friends to talk openly about their medical dramas, both real and imagined.
We're part of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, with new episodes released every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you love to get your podcasts.
Stay healthy.
I want to give you a chance to compliment somebody. Who is the best teacher?
The best teacher
that you've had?
I think my favorite was Distin. As far as a teacher, just because he set a good. I come from like a sports, but I played sports in high school, and so he had that kind of a sports approach to improv, just
like drills.
Drills, just like getting your mind right. Like he would start with a get your mind right. Warm up, like with just like pointies with patterns and stuff, just like to get your mind
warm it up.
Yeah, just to warm up the mind. And also breaking down a Herald, which like once you can break down the Herald and even like a like game, that's indispensable at UCB. I really liked all my teachers.
Yeah, you answered the question. There's no need to say somebody else
now.
You already said
though.
I don't want to know.
Dave Siegel.
Is there
Aaron Jackson?
Okay, great job.
Ben Romega.
They're all fantastic.
Lydia Hanson.
Okay, there you go. They were all mad and now they're all happy.
Now they're
is there an exercise that you like the most in terms of
this one is there's two of them that I like.
Let's hear them so other coaches can steal them.
One of them is this is like a just straight up drills. This is from Alan Straczynski. I don't know who gave it to him, but he was coaching my indie team, Kiss Me Bro, and he was like, okay, you guys aren't giving the greatest initiations. That's fine. What you'll do now is assume that your scene partner is a genius, and that whatever initiation, no matter how shitty it is a game move. Make their game move one such that, like, if I say some shitty initiation, like, what's up, dude? How would you make someone saying, what's up, dude? How can you provide the base reality to make something like that line, which is, like, not really anything baked into it, a comedic premise to play?
I told you I only live on the ground.
Yeah, well, you know, I just gotta figure it out because, like, you know, you've been on the ground for so long. I just gotta point it out, like, what's up? You don't know. That's
oh my god, you and your freaking sky dwelling ways.
Yeah, I'm a sky dweller, man. I gotta let you ground dwellers know. Sky dwellers forever. yeah, he ran that with. He would just like do. Everyone would do like 5-10 of those, like over and over again, just to build this muscle of like, if I say what's up, what is the who, what, and where that would make that funny. Like oftentimes status, like making someone high status if they like say some weird statement, or making someone immediately like low status if they say something like with a high status of energy, like those things really help. But that one,
that's cool. I like that.
And milestones. I first did it with I think Brady O'Callahan, who coached my group, Bert Sherbert. He would have us do like, okay, be like the doctor's office. What are the like milestones? And this is for exploration. This is like after you've already found a funny thing. Mm-hmm. How do you go back to your base reality? And like, oftentimes we'll feel like, oh shit, I don't know what to do next. And it's just like, do whatever. Like if you're in a doctor's office and you're a doctor and someone's a patient, do the patient interview, you know, get your tongue depressor and then check their ears. Like, what are the things that a normal doctor would do? Mm-hmm. That's probably what a bad doctor would do, just like with whatever game move. So you do it first with your milestones and then do it again. But like, this doctor enrolled in what's it called? Capoeira classes.
Okay. So I was gonna say clown college.
I was thinking of clown colleges, and I don't want to. So you know, they might be like, all right, like you know, have a seat, and they might, you know, jaunt over using capoeira to tongue depressors, so that they're doing both those things and
right.
Man, I hope I sold Milestone. That's honestly one of my favorites.
Let me tell you something right now. You didn't sell it, but the brightest of us did take the smartest parts of that exercise.
Every time I tried to explain that exercise in front of a group, they're like,
no, yeah,
I
terrible
don't.
Yeah,
awful. It's just, they're like, I'm like, you guys get it right? And they're like, no.
Okay, now I want to give you a chance to compliment yourself.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Oh, thanks.
What was like... Name. Give me a shining moment.
A
shining moment on stage doing some improv. Doesn't have to be on Harold or Lloyd if it's not that. But like a moment where you were feeling real good. You were feeling real good about a scene.
Oh yeah. It was recently. It was with Ice Cold Bev.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was we were doing a group game, and Rudy.
I used to be on a team with Rudy.
Oh, yeah, dude, he's fucking great. Rudy was like this. It was an upset. I want to say parent.
Okay.
That all of a sudden like had magical powers.
Yeah,
like, yeah, magic, and he was like upset with I think a PTA meeting. I could be butchering this, but
yeah.
He like reached out to me with his magic powers, as to like, I assumed like, oh, he's like
he's trying to magic me. Yeah. So I kind of like mimed. I didn't even say anything. I just like got force choked.
Yeah.
Like, oh, oh, and I threw myself. And it got such a reaction that I don't think I had ever heard for a move that I didn't even say anything. Yeah. I think the audience just responded really positively to like a very physical activity.
I mean, it looks awesome.
Yeah, right?
Like so that's such a thing. That's the great thing about improv, I think, is Rudy did something not knowing if you would understand what you were doing.
Yeah.
But you guys set up some base reality in which he has magic powers and I guess maybe is upset at you for some reason. All he does is put his hand out.
Yeah.
For you to react, and you immediately start choking and throw yourself across the room. People are like, holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I just saw that on stage live right in front of me with people who I know did not know, like, he didn't know that he was about to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's great.
Now that you're saying it out loud, damn, man. That's cool.
sounds dope.
It sounds cool as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I am going to start wrapping this up, even though we could talk all day and people would want to listen all day. Man, that's the other thing.
That's what's insane to me. You're still in this episode, kudos to you, man. You could have been doing
Listen, they're like, why are you wrapping it up? Don't keep going. Keep going.
Keep going.
But you don't get to keep listening. We're going to wrap it up.
We'll wrap it.
All right. what's next for you, man? What are you what's your next 5-year plan?
Great question. So I again took to a dream journal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I don't write it down, I just won't. It just becomes a thought.
All right,
like,
you hear that, everybody? Write stuff down.
It's truth be told, by writing it down, it's like
you're manifesting.
Believe that shit. Like it's like a cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
Either you were lying when you wrote the thing you wanted to do down, or you start making even the smallest actions towards achieving that.
I like that.
I'm so big on growth.
And it's good to like focus your energy
100%
and know really in your mind, this is what I want to do.
This is what I want
to
do. Yeah.
It's actually, that's related to improv too, because you can have a reality in your mind, but unless you speak it out loud, neither your partner nor the audience can get on board. You gotta speak it. I like that. All right.
Oh man. Damn.
This is a free podcast.
This is free as hell. Oh
all
my
right,
god.
All right. Continue.
So I got a lot of things that I want to do in the next 5 years,
mm-hmm.
but most of them, I want to put together a half hour of stand up. So that's something I've been working on. Just hitting. If you're already on stage as an improviser, it's like the leap to get good at stand up. You're already comfortable on stage. Yeah.
To teach a class from improv to stand up.
Oh damn!
Yeah, it's real. Honestly, it's funny because I didn't have the curriculum like all laid out before I did it, and my fiance has to help me, like, because she's a teacher, helped me like kind of write it out. And once I did it, I was like, oh, this is for real. You can get from improv to stand-up.
Oh, 100%.
It is so,
way easier than starting, like, anybody who's just straight up doing stand-up and had no other experience. Yeah.
Even somebody who's just really good at writing and writing jokes, it's still much harder for them than an improviser, I think.
100%. Yeah. As an improviser, you're already used to performing. You're performative. So, that's something I've been focused on. It's just, like, putting together a good half hour. Eventually, like, I want to get to touring. Like, that's what I wrote down, is, like, get to touring.
Touring stand-up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love writing. I've been working on, you know.
Did you ever finish the sketch classes?
Oh, you know what? After 201, I was looking for a 301 that fit on my schedule, and it didn't. I think, like, over the course of 2 years, it expired. But then I was like, you know what? I can either start the sketch program all over.
You can do the 301.
Oh, yeah?
I also learned this from my improv thread. Eric Tenoy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and Kevin Hines both said, if you have been a part of the community and you clearly have been, you can email them and show that you've been doing the stuff, and that whole kind of limitation of the time limit, they make exceptions for things like that.
Yo,
so Other people too know that. They want just for me. They wrote that public. All right.
They added me and I didn't even know it. Dang. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
If you can prove, if you can kind of prove, and you can easily can.
Yeah.
But if you can show that, I've continued it. I didn't go away from it.
Yeah.
They just kind of put that for people who were taking a class and leave and weren't doing comedy or anything at all.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, dude. All right.
Just so you know.
I should have just asked. That's what I should have done.
All right. So. Yeah. So writing,
stand up.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you could only do one thing.
Oh, shit.
And if you could only do one thing, what would it be? Okay. Either you're a star of a television show and or movies. You are a writer, and let's give you like the top two, like you're a head writer creating your own television shows, but just writing.
Ooh.
Or
damn,
you are performing stand up, touring, you know, doing the half hour, doing the late night specials.
And I can do all three.
And you can only choose one of those. Oh yeah, for the stand up.
Yeah,
I'm doing all three of these.
You're doing all three of those.
The specials. You're doing specials. You're doing tours. You're on late night spots.
But, and I'm a movie star.
No, you're not a movie. No,
and I'm a writer.
No,
on
the
a
first
show?
One is the. I hate you so much. Improv is a part of all of them. I imagine you'd always want to do improv.
Yeah.
So which one of those three would it be?
Probably, honestly, stand up.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably stand up.
That's cool.
At least for the next 5 years.
I like that.
Although I'm like, I feel spread. I feel like I'm trying to do all three right now, and it's not.
Yeah.
You gotta do one.
You gotta start focusing. Yeah. You know, you don't, it's the same thing. I feel the same way. I was really spread out. I kind of stopped doing stand up for a while because I was really trying to focus on writing, sketch, getting a TV show, honestly.
Yeah.
But lastly, anything you want to say? Any last comment to the improv audience as a whole?
Yeah.
Or just like a life philosophy, kind of like, hey, guys, love one another.
Honestly, yeah. I credit my friend Adrian with me being able to perform and live my dream because up until then I just had the wrong mind. Like the mindset was very much fixed. But I truly believe that with enough like effort, deliberate effort towards an end goal, be it like performing on a UCB stage or anything else, like if you're willing to put in the work, and work harder than you've ever worked on anything else. Eventually, just by focusing on the approach of putting in work, I don't really believe in luck. I just believe in like someone being prepared when an opportunity presents itself. I think Jonathan, you definitely recognize that. Everything that's coming your way, Jonathan Braylock, y'all need to keep your eyes on this guy. He's already well. he's got IMDb, Wikipedia. Like, watch out for this dude.
I got them under five though.
That feeling of jealousy of like, oh man, this person's getting that and this person is that. Mm-hmm. It goes away when you're working hard on your own objectives because you recognize like, oh, they worked hard to get where they got. It wasn't like any kind of luck or anything. They were just prepared when the opportunity presented itself, and eventually an opportunity will present itself to you. And if you're working, gangbusters.
I love it, man. I love it. And you are doing awesome. You're hilarious. We've worked together in some things. And I can't wait to keep doing more stuff.
For sure.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to plug, even though this is not a part of the thing. But
yeah.
I'm all about plugs. You want to plug anything?
Yeah. I'm going to plug, I got Harold Nye with Ice Cold Bev.
Go watch him, Ice Cold Bev.
Tuesday nights. Also, you see me on regularly. I'll perform with Improv Nerds on Monday night.
Improv Nerds, baby.
If you want to do some stand-up, you want to do your tight five, come through Magic City, 8:30 in Greenpoint. Come through. You can do some type five stand up and look out for Disco Ball, the comedy show. It's a monthly show we host at the Douglas.
All right.
Oh, and TOS. Don't forget TOS. I'm giving all the shout-outs now. Shout out. Shout out to all my boys.
All right. And that was a long-form conversation. Next week's episode will pick up with a new round of improvisers based in Los Angeles. City of Angels.
City of Angels.
But fear not, because Adrian will be returning as your host in 5 weeks.
Look for it.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.